This is going to be an exciting podcast because actually it wasn't planned to be like this, because you're about to hear from Rich Payne, who is an EWS superstar and, as you're going to find out, is our new GMBN presenter. But you're not supposed to know that until tomorrow. So check out the Dirt Shed Show tomorrow because there's more coming on it. But for now, it's over to Henry to tell us all about Rich Payne. Who is this guy?
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the GMBN podcast. This week, something really exciting. We have our new presenter, Richard Payne. So I thought I'd get him on and hope to get to know him a little bit better. As always, you can watch this here on YouTube, or you can enjoy the conversation on your podcast streaming service of choice. As always, don't forget to like and subscribe, and I hope you enjoy the conversation. Cheers. So, Richard Payne, welcome to the channel.
Henry, thank you for having me. It's good to be here. It's nice to be on the channel.
So you're actually taking a huge weight off my shoulders. I will no longer be the GMBN new boy.
Well, someone's got to take up that mantle, and I'll do it.
I'm kind of becoming like the year eight, you know, no longer the smallest kid. Which is obviously a great relief for me.
Yeah. I remember those days, going into year seven, terrified of your little blazer and your new tie on. I don't know, kids still wear blazers and ties to school, I don't know. But.
So let's just talk a bit about you then. So grew up actually local to the area, Somerset lad.
Born and bred.
Yeah.
Strong in the arm, thick in the head.
And but you haven't been living in this area. So we're based in Bath, for those that don't know, in the southwest of the UK. And you haven't been living in this area for very long. You've kind of come back to it.
I have, yeah. So I've lived in Jersey for the last just under 12 years.
Wow.
Until coming back for this job sort of thing, yeah.
I can only presume you lived there for the lucrative tax, the tax reasons, obviously.
Obviously, no.
But you had a pretty kind of cool angle on your racing career, I suppose. So based out of Jersey, and you were doing what I thought was a pretty cool series and sort of kind of ahead of its time, EWS or Bust.
Yeah.
Which was there you travel the world,
yeah,
race on your bike at a very, very high level.
I thought you were going to say vlogging then. I'm glad you didn't say vlogging. But it kind of was. Yeah. So it was actually me and my partner at the time. It was never really a concept to like put it out there. We were just going to make a video just for something cool to remember.
Yeah.
Like all our travels and stuff, going to all these races. But actually turns out a lot of people liked it. So we ended up putting it out there and it became a bit more legit.
Yeah.
And yeah, since then there has been other Privateer series. I like to think none as good.
And obviously racing EWS, which is still a series in its infancy in some regard.
Yeah, in comparison to everything else out there, I think, yeah.
How did it change for you over the years? Because we saw people, when EWS started coming about, and there was a lot of privateers.
Yeah.
And I think privateers could get very strong results.
Yes.
Did you see the sort of field of play change over those years you were racing it?
Yeah, definitely. I think as the years went on, the standard has definitely got higher.
Mm.
And I think that's as the series itself has become, again, a bit more legit, a bit more official, better locations, better run, bigger sponsors coming in. The calibre of riders is just raised.
Because that's a really interesting point you make. You know, what do you think was the main factor behind the standard? Maybe that's unfair, but there does seem to be obviously a higher level of professionalism from money, which does help.
Yeah, yeah.
Which it would be fair to assume that that's going to lead to better racing in some ways or higher standard of racing. But there seems to be a lot of fresh, young, exciting talent in there, which maybe there wasn't on its inception.
Yeah, interesting. I wouldn't have said the prize money is very good, but the prestige of it is really high.
Yeah.
You know, to be like ranked up there in the EWS is a big achievement. You know, the courses are gnarly, the days are long. So I think that is what draws people in. And I think the amount of bike time you get as well.
Yeah.
The quality of the bike time is really good. Also, I think in the past, entry system is changed over the years. So they used to do like a first come, first serve and a lottery system. Now there's sort of pre-qualifying, and then it's harder to get a spot now. So all these little factors just help raise the game.
Yep.
And make it tough.
But something that boggles my mind, really twists my melon with EWS.
Man.
Man. is how the hell, after say 40 minutes of racing, all those crashes, sometimes mechanicals, and it's often the same kind of often familiar faces in say the top five, all separated by sometimes in literally fractions of a second on stages. How it all averages out in such a
they're all aren't they?
But do you know what I mean? But say they have a crash that costs them 10 seconds. It's funny, they all have crashes that all, and it all works out.
You, if you ride for that long a time, even the best riders in the world will slip up. So if you, you know, it's very, very hard to ride at full tilt, isn't it? For 40 minutes, or up to an hour sometimes, if not a little more, without making a slip up. So by law of averages, I suppose,
it will.
Each one of them is going to make a little slip up somewhere.
Yeah.
It's just they all just make really, really fast slip ups.
It's just fascinating, when you look at a downhill World Cup, which is obviously an elite level, and people practicing these lines, etc. Yeah. And when you get a result in the EWS, and say with five stages, and it's literally 10 seconds between the top three, and you divide it by the five stages, you realise how close these times
are. Yeah, it's crazy, isn't it?
Yeah.
Because it's not like, if you compare it to a downhill, which is 3 to 5 minutes, should we say, on average?
Yeah.
And an average EWS stage might be 5 to 7 or 8 minutes over 6 or so stages, or possibly more. Yeah, it's a lot of time. Mm. So for it still to be so tight, I think it's a testament to how good all the guys really are.
And obviously the people racing wasn't anything that changed. The stages and the racing themselves. Yeah. I think one of the cool things about the EWS, right from its inception, is it never tried to bottleneck itself into one particular format. They said, well, if there's a chairlift, we might use it.
Yeah, and definitely.
What was your perception of the stages and how... And was the racing harder some years? Because I think it was last year, everyone said, wow, that was... Sorry, the year before.
Yeah, it was the year
that
before,
was maybe, that was too much, maybe.
Obviously, I lived on an island that was about 330 foot tall. So all the stages were pretty wild in that sense. Yeah. When you're on an island 9x5 and about 330 foot tall or something, anything over a slight gradient is a pretty wild stage to us. But... you could see it, I think, over the years, as again the sort of a bar was raised, so were the level of like the length of the days, the stages, the liaisons, to a point where, like you said, 2 years ago now, it maybe just went a bit too far.
Yep.
Because you can still have these crazy days and gnarly stages without making us pedal, you know, 20 miles in between liaisons or whatever, or making the liaison times. I think that's what happened, was the liaison times started getting very tight. So actually you're doing like an XC sprint race to get to the next stage in time, then you're trying to recover, get yourself together, get your food, drink inside you, get your kit sorted again, and then dropping straight into an 8 minute, you know, World Cup stage.
Yep.
And it just was probably a bit too much. So they kind of reined that. I feel like this year, or last year, sorry, they've reined that in a bit. The stages are, don't get me wrong, still really tough stages, but their liaison timing and sort of food stations, things like that, are probably far more manageable.
Yeah, because when we watch, you know, me as somebody that loves watching the EWS and the highlights, we never really get the full picture because it's highlights. You don't see.
Yeah.
You can watch the helmet cans and stuff, but I don't think it's quite the same. With the EWS, sometimes I find, you know, having, you know, ridden the Alpine stuff personally, it doesn't have to sometimes be that steep, but sometimes it's literally not made for bikes.
No.
And that makes it super technical and often quite high consequence.
Yeah.
Was there much of that stuff that...
I think Zermatt, the last round last year, was a perfect example of that. A lot of the trails are like walker tracks, which would have these stone curbs almost across them to help like water drainage off of them. And you're just, they run it like 45 degrees to the trails. So you're like pinning it down and all of a sudden you got to like bunny hop this big old curb. Otherwise you just smash into it and write a wheel off.
Yeah.
And those aren't obviously in a mountain bike track. They're they're man made, but they're in a walker's trail.
Yeah.
So you do see it, but the walker's trails obviously get really worn. They're just as hard.
Yes.
They might not be as steep, but they're blooming long and really hard. I can tell you that was your
physical as well. But...
Yeah.
So obviously, you know, race the EWS.
Yep.
Growing up, dare I say it, you might have had a few more summers than you being a young, wet behind the ears for the EWS's inception.
Yeah, definitely.
What was racing all about for you when you were younger?
It was proper grassroots, local, short, fun little downhills. Really relaxed. I think at some races they still even use like stopwatch and stuff for timing. So it was proper chilled out. You just turn up. Everyone knew everyone. It was really fun. There was. It's not like now when I think even say it like quite grassroots of everyone talks about training and practicing. Yep. And you know, you wouldn't. You would just go there, mess about with your buddies, do some runs. And have a good day.
Yeah.
Like, obviously, when you started going up to, like, maybe bigger series or nationals and stuff, it was a bit more serious. You wanted to do well. You always want to do well, but, like, they were just fun.
Yeah. You know? Because in the Southwest, though, there was a really strong riding scene, I guess.
I'd say there still is.
Well, there still is. But in that time, I'm thinking, in that time, you know, the Athertons before they moved to...
Yeah, loads of guys.
The Wales. And, you know, I just think that must have been such a cool... thing to see where you all ended up.
Yeah, definitely. Like, we had like a strong group even going to school. So like me and G and Rach went to school together, and Dan Stanbridge, who rode for Mojo and stuff at the time, and quite a few others. And then there was like a bit further, there's like all the Western boys and loads of guys. Loads of us used to go to all these little local races, and then we'd go further afield. And everyone knew everyone and meet up at the weekends to go riding, and we'd go ride at lunchtime and school and stuff like this. And yeah, we had a proper right little crew of us. It was real good fun. And then you get older, don't you?
Yeah, you get older. So, you know, you're racing in the Southwest.
Yep.
Was that predominantly downhill?
Yes. Yeah, that, like, am enduro right, didn't exist.
Am I right in thinking you dabbled in four-cross, though?
Yeah, I raced... I started off in downhill, and then as I got a bit older, we had a good BMX track near us called Burnham, and I really liked a bit of BMX and, like, the tracks and stuff. And four-cross was then, like... getting bigger, so I did some four cross races and did all right, and like, yeah, did some nationals and did pretty good, and some couple of World Cups and stuff like that, and yeah, sort of. I didn't move away from downhill because downhill was like what we had to ride round home.
Yep.
But four cross, I found it fun racing against other people.
Yep.
Kind of like a bit of elbows out action, and it four cross is different because you've got like a physical target if someone's in front of you. Yeah. Or behind you, not to get bashed off in a corner or something. So it's different.
See, a friend of mine realised that, and this is actually pretty sneaky, I don't know how much I should be endorsing this. He realised that for spectator tickets to the World Cup in Fort Bill was X amount of money. But if you entered the four cross, and you allowed two part of your assistants team for his brother and his girlfriend, he just raced a World Cup, didn't qualify, didn't care.
And you get better passes as well.
And you get a better pass.
Yeah, so you had like, it was quids in. That's some good thinking.
I think four cross in the UK is going to be on the up, about 700 entries.
Yeah.
Pretty cool.
Yeah, that's true. It's true though. You did get like passes, like I think you got like a family pass and like a mechanics pass on top of your race entry and stuff.
Smart thinking.
Yeah. The missus suddenly becomes a mechanic for like the weekend and things like that.
Because I want to talk to you about location. It's something that I find, it sounds stupid, but it's such an interesting thing for me. You know, I grew up in the UK.
Yeah, a lot of people ask me this, so this is an interesting one.
I moved to New Zealand.
Yeah.
I also lived in France.
Oh,
I find I've been spoiled.
Yeah, those are some pretty good riding spots.
Yeah, I find, and you know, I obviously I love riding my bike here, and it offers things that the UK, the New Zealand or France doesn't offer in some ways.
Yeah.
Mainly I feel here, like when you find like a real secret spot or like a real loamy trail,
no one can make a muddy rut track like the Brits can.
But in New Zealand, like, because it's such a high amount of riders in a small spot in Queenstown, it will be loam for about 25 minutes and then it will be rutted out.
Okay, yeah.
But here you can actually ride.
Yeah, yeah.
So I you know, there was, for the stuff I like to ride, there were plus points and bad
points.
Did
you find there then that the riding was really concentrated into certain areas?
Yeah, I would say so.
Whereas here, we might be really spread out, I think.
Well, but, you know...
Everyone's got their own little local spot here.
It has, but the thing with, you know, with Queenstown, it's quite a weird spot because it's a resort town.
Yeah.
There are the known trails and the unknown trails, you know. And
off-piste.
Yeah, and the bike park was fantastic. And when I first got there, they didn't really understand that mountain biking was something you can make money out of.
Yeah.
And they thought it was a bit of a pain in the neck, I think.
Okay.
But they realised Skyline, you know, my first season there, put in so much work, and now it's incredible riding.
Yeah, that's pretty big time there now, isn't it?
Yeah, and it's got, I mean, some of the secret stuff is just unreal. Don't ever go, guys.
Discourage
don't,
everyone.
Don't turn up. It's not,
it's
worth,
not worth
it.
It. No, not worth it's miles
it.
Away.
Yeah, always rains. Crap riding. But something interesting, you know, we touched upon the early one, going to school with the Athertons.
Yeah.
they moved to Wales.
Yeah.
I'm thinking pretty much for the quality of the riding. Would that be fair to say?
Yeah, pretty much.
So they made the decision.
But those guys are banging out like top results from year seven.
Yeah.
You know, those guys are, and still are, obviously insane bike riders and racers. And, you know, they were setting fastest times of the day when they were in youth categories and stuff like this. Oh, so they...
Just that good.
Yeah, yeah. I remember I think G got like... We were at a race and I think he was in youth, so we were 15, 16 maybe, and he got fastest time of the day at a national, I think.
Oh, wow.
So he could hold
his
own.
Was
it
a Muddy Fox as well?
I think it was. Yeah. I think it survived the race.
And, you know, so then going from the Southwest to Jersey.
Yeah.
I know it sounds a bit stupid, but being a mainlander to an islander, is there a difference in mentality? Is there a difference in, I would sort of, where's an element of kind of, I'm sure there's many great things about island life, but it's a lot more restricted, well, literally where you can go.
Yeah, I would have said I was pretty naive at the time. So yeah. I was racing a lot of four cross and downhill and stuff like this. And I was like, oh, you know, I'll move to Jersey. I moved over with a friend. And UK was going through a bit of a tough time of, I think, like the recession and all that stuff. Yeah. I'd not long finished uni. So I was like, well, yeah, crack on. Let's go to Jersey. Sounds delightful. I'll just keep racing. It'd be fine to sail back or fly back or whatever. Get over there and I'm like, oh, they don't even have any dirt jumps or a BMX track, say, or actually any tracks that I know about.
Yeah,
this could be trickier than I thought.
Because
and it's very small.
Because when we talk about, like, you know, islands, UK islands off the UK mainland, you know, people think the Isle of Wight, the Isle of Man.
Yeah.
They're a lot closer
than Jersey. Yeah, they are within
miles. Jersey's almost...
75 miles.
How close is Jersey to France?
14. So, yeah, it was... And actually, that comes back to EWS briefly. That's why I made the decision to start racing more EWSs and things, because it was actually cheaper for us to go to Europe...
Oh, wow.
Than it was to get the boat to the UK. And it was way quicker. It's a 4.5-hour boat to get to the UK from Jersey. It's 1.5 hours over to France. It's cheaper and the riding's better.
Yeah.
So it just made sense in a way.
No, I understand that.
You know, you still got tolls and petrol and things like, you know, all those normal racing away things. But actually worked out easier to race an EWS.
I thought it was like, you know, part and parcel, you know, sort of... recommended procedure for an EWS privateer just to bump the toll roads.
Nah.
Just follow my bumper, mate. It'll be all right. Just bloody hell. Keep it close, lads.
Just start going like the extra, you know, 10 hours adding onto a journey sort of thing on all these obscure. No, we tried it a couple of times. And it's just a hassle because we drove a big Burfer, a big camper van, Sprinter, long wheelbase thing. And you're going through all these like A roads, I guess. And you're just like, oh my God. Get seasick in this thing. So you're like, nah, I'll suck up the cost.
And going, how do you feel your progression as a rider? Do you feel that was affected by Jersey, or do you think you had to just appreciate different elements more?
Oh, I would have said it was affected, unfortunately. Like I said, I was naive moving over, thinking that nothing would really change. And then I realised the cost of travelling away is loads more, the riding. Let's say the first couple of years is not too bad because you're discovering all this new stuff and you've still got, it's all fairly fresh. But then what I would compare it to is it's really good riding in Jersey and I would actually recommend people going there to check it out. It's a lovely place. But it's like riding the same trail centre all the time.
Mm.
Imagine your local trail centre. You probably think, oh, I got a wicked trail centre near me. And imagine riding nothing else ever.
Yep.
And it suddenly might become a bit tedious and wear a bit thin.
How is that? You know, people have said about Richie Rude.
Yeah.
You know, in his hometown, there isn't big mountains. And it's remarkable how such a talented rider.
Yeah.
You know, junior downhill world champion. And obviously then went on to achieve everything in EWS.
Yeah, definitely.
How did you practice? How did you...
I'm shit on left. I'm really good at left-handers. You know what I mean? No, I'm terrible at left-handers.
Or the old Zoolander
syndrome. Yeah. No, so like fitness is obviously something that I can practice.
Yeah.
You know, road riding, XC riding, stuff like that. So, you know, you can turbo train and gym stuff. You can do that wherever. You're not, your terrain doesn't particularly limit you too much to that.
Yeah.
Yeah, when it came, obviously, we didn't have the elevation, so we didn't have really long downhill tracks. So you just try as hard as you can on what you've got, make it work.
Because we've come from, we probably had a similar experience, but we've done different things. I moved, picked up my whole life,
yeah,
and moved it for the riding.
Yeah.
You made it work.
Yeah, I suppose.
What would your advice be? Because I'm probably quite a proponent of being like, just pack your bags, move. What would your advice be to a young, budding racer?
Yeah.
And they want to get better, but perhaps they don't have the terrain available to them. What would you?
Just make the most of what you've got. So I suppose if you've got a stretch of land or a hill or whatever, just try and, rather than just build loads of different things, build a good track, nail it, get really good on it, adapt it.
Hmm.
Don't just build a whole nother track possibly. But like, I, because we were limited with space in Jersey, I always think people would try and build all these tracks and squeeze them into, and they would all be about the same kind of track.
Yeah.
Rather than, I mean, you're not really allowed to build in Jersey, so we didn't build tracks.
We're going to gloss over that.
But but instead of like improving on a track that you had, I don't know, make the corners tighter, deeper, faster, bigger jumps.
Yeah.
I don't know, bring in some dirt or rocks and things, make a rock garden. You know, I would suggest that. And then things you can control easier. So like fitness-wise, road riding, turbo training, gym stuff. Those are all things you can work on without having to be too dependent upon your environment.
Yeah.
Unless you live in the middle of nowhere, maybe, I don't know. Obviously kids can't just drive somewhere, yes, if you're really young or something like that. But, you know, when you hit that sort of racing age, generally you're 17, 18 plus, aren't you? So yeah, things like the gym workout, get a little plan together, just be organized.
Yeah.
All helps.
So you mentioned that it was in some ways made more sense to go to the European continent and race,
yep,
and do the EWSs. If you had stayed in the UK in God's country, Somerset, do you think you would have ended up doing more downhill racing? Would it have been downhill World Cups or bust?
I don't know about downhill World Cups because I mean, that's downhill's tough, isn't it? Well, EWS is tough. It definitely would have probably changed. I think I probably would have stuck to downhill because I really liked riding downhill. But then I dare say, as a lot of racers do get a bit older, they might make the move to sort of racing a bit of enduro. So yeah, I'd like to think that hopefully EWS or bus probably would have still happened. I had a wicked time doing it. I don't plan on slowing up too much just yet anyway.
Yeah, so, I was going to say.
It's not the end.
We've sort of, you know, been chatting over this last couple of weeks, and you seem to be very competitive still.
If I
mention something, anything to do with bikes, it's really cool because, and I think this, it's brilliant, but I've noticed you'll often talk about it in a race environment. Or
yeah,
like we'll talk about an enduro bike, like, oh, that would be really good for racing. Or you'll talk about a tablet, that would be really good for this.
Yeah, getting the most out of something. Sort of,
yeah, I'm sure the boys will be signing you up for God knows what endurified racing. Is there any other sort of racing you enjoy? Could we get you on a downhill bike?
Definitely. I haven't owned a downhill bike for about 5 years, sadly, because it just wasn't worth it in Jersey. I sold it, didn't need it. And enduro bikes now are so good, aren't they, that if you've got a fairly mellow downhills, you can get away with it. But I would, I like to race a bit of cross country.
Yeah.
I do like a bit of XC. That's like, I hate it at the time, and then afterwards I actually enjoy it.
I think though, and it's something I always talk about, but the best fun you'll ever had isn't fun at the time.
Ooh,
you'll look back and go,
a lot of it, a lot, I would agree there.
You'll find yourself recanting a tale over a pint and about how amazing it was. Oh man, this ride.
Yeah.
And then you actually think, actually, I hated every second of that.
I thought that about a cyclocross race. I did a cyclocross race on my mountain bike. It was horrendous. It's the same as an XC, but I mean, kind of longer, and obviously, you know, like your art's just redlining for what, an hour or hour 30, whatever. And you're like, oh my God, not this hill for the 7th or 8th time and some of that. And then afterwards, you're like, oh, my heart rate's finally got below, you know, 180. And I actually quite enjoyed that.
Do you think then that with sort of, you know, you do see a trend of people saying, oh, the enduro bikes are so good now. And they are.
Yeah.
Do you think you could justify having a downhill bike in this area?
I don't know. When we went to Bike Park Wales the other day shooting, and I was like, man, even like riding Bike Park Wales has got some wicked tracks. But even there, I think there's probably only a couple that you could justify a downhill bike on. Mm. Even there, so, I was on a fairly short travel, 130 mil. And all right, you could probably go up, bump it up to 150, 160, whatever. 130 mil, 29. And I was having a blast down all the trails and still and doing most of the trails.
But,
so to justify going up to a...
It seems to me, though, that it's the four cross sort of riders mentality, because I think that some people that come from four cross and have raced that sort of thing, and people that have a lot of very fine skills, see the bike as a nimble and agile weapon.
Then people
with lack of skills, yours truly, I like to have the blanket of 200 mil of travel. I love riding downhill.
Absolutely fail safe.
There is nothing better to me. Yeah. It's funny, the only time I like riding clips is on a downhill bike, because in a bike park, because I want to hit stuff, charge through the roughest, most horrible track, and your feet are going, and you're just like, there, lock and load. On it, you know what I mean? That's what I love riding. And I'm too mechanically sympathetic to ride a short travel bike.
I've seen it on quite a few occasions. Bone shaking your way through.
Yeah, I love it.
I don't want to say, how do I word it? Like, maybe someone who does like that, it's like a buffer almost, isn't it?
Yeah.
Should we call it a skill buffer? Is that fair?
I think it's just like, it just, you know, when the trail is asking you questions. Yeah. Can you do this? Can you do that? It's basically like a maths problem, but the calculator in your hand. Do you know what I mean? Where a true skilled ride, like the people that come from that BMX trials, four-cross background, they're just going to do a mental arithmetic.
Yeah, I'm doing my algebra all the time.
Yeah, and I'm there just like, oh God, 3.1. Where's the pi button? God damn it, you know?
Yeah. No, I was too busy writing boobies and putting it upside down.
That's one thing we talk about location. And I'm really enjoying living in the UK, but not having a plethora of steep, rough tracks is something that that's the one thing I haven't been able to adjust to, because I feel that our steep, rough tracks here,
they're very different to very big different. Mountain stuff. There's no comparison, because unless you maybe went to Scotland in some places, but we generally just don't have that wide open, flat out, rough, big mountain stuff. Yeah. You know, we've got very steep, really rough Tekkers trails in the woods and stuff like that. You know, you can find those in quite a lot of places, but they don't have the speed element to them a lot of the time. Yeah. And that's what I've done, you know, a bit of motocross in the past, and I found that really helped with just going really fast and getting used to that speed and roughness. But I think you're right. We just don't have that element really to our riding too much. And no doubt some places do have it,
but
it's the length, the roughness, the speed. It's a very hard thing to recreate if you don't have that.
So coming from someone that has put so much effort into racing over the years, and now you're kind of stepping away from it. You know, I'm sure you'll do events here, much like Neil and Blake do, but you're not traveling the world in the same way.
No.
How do you think that's going to affect the metrics you use to judge how good or how fun a bike ride was?
Yeah.
How's that going to change that for you?
It's interesting, because I've always raced, and I've always used racing to set a target. I'm quite goal driven, so I'll use like the Nationals or the EWS or something to almost not be a purpose to ride, but give me a reason to ride and train and do things the way I do. So yeah, interestingly, now that I'm still going to race, because I love to race, maybe not at the same level or the amount as before. So I do find it quite difficult to sort of switch off when I'm with friends and just have fun.
Yeah.
So like if I'm with a group of buddies and we went for a ride, and even at the start of a ride, I get a bit competitive.
Oh yeah, Half Wheel McGee.
No, not that.
That's this guy. So just for the viewers at home, I said, this is when Richard first came to the office, and I said, hello there, dear fellow. May I perchance interest you in a bicycle ride? And he wouldn't leave me alone on the climb, always half me. And I'd catch up, and then he'd put down the
barrel. I didn't know the pace.
It was lambs to the slaughter. Honestly, I came back looking like I had carbon monoxide poisoning. I was just red like a tomato. I was absolutely rooted.
I was like that. when are we riding? I do find it hard to switch off in that sense and not. I suppose not try and get every, because I think it all links. So when you live, like living in Jersey, you try and eke out every bit you could from your ride.
Yep.
So I still find that very difficult. When I go out on a ride, I've got to get something out of it. It's got to have a purpose or something almost.
Yeah, I find social riding very difficult. Obviously, I never rode to the level.
Yeah, you were really mean to me.
No, I just told you to bloody slow down, for hell's teeth. I just thought I'd show you the local trails, and it turned into like a training camp. I was like, Oh my God.
I thought we were doing a VO2 max test.
But no, I was just, you know, I find for me that I think I've become, like, you know, it's great to have all the feedback and the data.
Yeah.
But I think sometimes I'm maybe a bit of a slave to the data. And
yes.
Because that's what I've come to refer to as my metric for enjoyment.
Numbers don't lie.
Numbers don't lie. And it's for that reason that I've become a Zwift addict.
You have.
I've become a Zwift
addict. You have.
I don't know what going full-time on Zwift means. I'm pretty sure it's got something to do with living in your parents' spare bedroom. But I'm going full-time Zwift. I love it.
Well, hang on. I'm going to have a go at you, though, because you told me off for half-wheeling you up the hill.
Yeah.
I got a text message you at 8 at night or something saying, do you want to come on? Oh, no. Do you want to come on Zwift?
Yeah.
I was like, no, I'm having me dinner.
Hang on. The thing is, right, everyone, the thing I love about Zwift, and this is, we're going to a small tangent for me to really.
You don't do that.
I don't. I mean, it's been happening. It's happened once or twice. I love it because everyone knows what they're getting themselves in for. And I sit there and I see all of us on a turbo trainer in real life. And before a race, for those that don't know, you have the virtual reality of you all sitting on turbo trainers on the start line.
Yeah.
And I think, my God, what have I turned into?
What's this world
and then gone? It begins and I'm just sweating out my eyeballs, man.
Yeah, because everyone's like,
he's so sick. And it honestly, I think I went one of the deepest I've ever gone on a bike. Oof. Last week.
We'll go for a ride again.
And mine was on Zwift. Oh. It wasn't a real bike. And honestly, I'm not, that satisfies that criteria to me, you know. Yes, I love to, you know, see lovely things on a mountain bike. And yes, I love to ride amazing descents. Mm. But something that also needs to be satisfied is just the brutalism of sometimes going and sitting on my absolute rivet. Because I think there's something so important, and it sounds really silly and pretentious and everyone's going to roll their eyes and it's going to be so heavily, it's going to be audible. But there's something for me so important about kind of connecting with that sort of animalistic side. I think sometimes it's good. I think sometimes it's good to be in high levels of discomfort. I think sometimes it's good to be very cold. I think sometimes it's good to be hungry.
Sometimes
it's good to be too hot. And for me, it's like a leveler. And, you know, I wonder how, bringing it back to what we're talking about, you know, being somebody that's coming away from competition and readdressing the metrics of what you enjoy in riding.
Yeah.
I wonder what you might find as your leveler. Because I never thought I'd enjoy Zwift. It's only...
It's a computer game,
not riding big mountains that's made me... Because that's how I used to go test myself.
Okay.
And now I'm like, I can get that same feeling of hammering myself up 45 minutes on a climb by sitting on Zwift. And that, to me, is like satisfying something. I never thought it would. I was very skeptical.
Well, I still train. I still go to the gym. I still do everything as if I was racing normally.
Yeah.
On a normal season coming up. So,
but that, at some point, is gonna peter away.
No,
I know, but that's just being realistic. It
yeah, no, it is. You're
There'll
right.
Be the
you can't race forever, and you can't. I am aware that I cannot race forever or be at the same level forever, and things like this. I suppose that's a bitter pill to swallow, probably for most racers out there. So it's. I'm going to.
But it sounds like you're kind of making sure you're prepared for the big thing that's coming, and I do that too. And I just think
I'm going to go cold turkey.
It's something that's super cool though, because it's. That, to me, is one of the focal points of being passionate about something.
Yeah.
I'm always like, I'm thinking, because I like to do the longer rides, and I'm thinking, I probably couldn't do a 5K day, like 5,000 meter climbing day at the moment. Oh, no, I probably could. That's okay, I could. I'm ready, just in case somebody says, in some weird situation, we've taken your mom dog's hostage. We know you love Worcester very much. But this Labrador is going to get it unless you can climb 5,000 meters. Do you know what I mean? Like, there's some ridiculous scenario.
I mean, I've never had a dog held hostage, but I think I know what you mean.
But do you know what I mean? Like, I'm just almost trying to prepare myself.
Yeah. No,
and
I
always
mean.
Need to be.
Yeah. It's, it is tough, because if it is something that you've always known and you love doing, it's very hard. You become almost set in your ways. So it's very hard to change and alter that.
Yeah. Inputs,
so
outputs, man. They'll get you.
Yeah. They'll I'm just going to. Keep riding with you and blast you on the climbs.
Well, next time I'll be prepared.
Oh,
honestly,
it's on.
I've been Zwifting.
Like, you have,
honestly,
I know you have.
Bring it. The power of Zwift is in
you. Yeah. The trouble is, you'll be getting a straight line, you get to a turn and you'll topple over now.
And also, I don't have power-ups, do I? Actually, no. I want to say on the record, people that use power-ups on Zwift.
Oh, God, no.
Reserve for the inner circles of hell.
I knew you were going to get going here.
We're all sitting on our rivet. Absolutely, this is like, you know, really wanted to go in absolutely hammer and tong, and then they press a button to make what?
I mean, I've not used a. I don't think I'm at the power up stage.
I don't use them. I let them. They just sit there, and I just look at them and think, "Not today, Satan. Not today."
I feel like if you've got to a stage where you've used Zwift enough to power up, whatever that may be, you've probably used it too much.
A power up is basically any point in a race, you can press a button which will give you an advantage.
It's like a mushroom on Mario Kart.
Something like that, yeah.
Cheating.
Yeah.
Bastards.
Yeah, that's what I feel. And they just zoom past me. I'm just like, listen, this is a hollow victory for you.
Well, you know, the little arrow lines on the roads of Mario Kart, and they're like, pew!
Yeah, it's similar to that. Okay. And it breaks my heart.
I'm glad we're on the same page.
Yeah, cool. Cool, cool, cool. I mean, it's almost a bit like going for a gentle ride with somebody, and it's a bit like that. But enough said about that. Thank you very much for coming on, Rich.
It's been my pleasure.
It's been great getting to know you a bit.
Future shenanigans.
I look forward to getting you on Zwift and exacting my revenge. Nice one.
Thanks, mate.
Thanks, guys.
Cheers.